Going to update 846, the first one after the feast, we have an editorial here by Kellen Mitchell, titled, The Question is Why? And if you haven't read that editorial, please do so. I want to take the time to just read one paragraph, which I believe is not only important, but it also goes hand in hand with what I'm going to say today. He says, Newton's first law of motion states that an object at rest stays at rest, and an object in motion stays in motion, with the same speed and in the same direction, unless acted upon by an external force. This plays out as true in our Christian lives. If we are not consistently making small steps towards overcoming and changing, then our lives will stay the same, and no amount of feasts will change that. God has called us out of this world and its way of thinking and acting. That calling is a massive external force. It catapults us forward. But then there is Satan, who is another external force. And if we are not focused 100% on God, and this has to be a critical and integral part of who we are, our why, then we will be pulled off course. Let us make it personal. Let us ask ourselves, what is our why for being a Christian? And then he's asking all kinds of questions here, which we all should be able to answer in an affirmative way. But far too often, we slip. And so it's a good reminder of asking ourselves, why are we here? Why are we here? Why are we, for instance, right now sitting here? Why are we listening in? Why are we later maybe listening to the sermons and watching them? Is this a game for us, or is it serious? You see, when I gave the last sermon in Germany at the end of the feast, I asked a question which I always ask, and Brian Gale gave an excellent sermon too throughout the feast and during the feast about why, or will you be here again next year? And I ended my speech to them with this very comment. I said, you know, will I see all of you again next year? And then I said, and I wished I could say yes, but I'm afraid I will have to say no. It's unfortunately a fact of life. Some will not be there next year. Make sure you will be there next year. In the week of the news, we first quoted an article by Vox, not Fox, but Vox, V-O-X. And this article talks about a very famous American writer. It says it's America's most eminent and well-respected historian of the Holocaust. In it, he warns that democracy here, he's talking about the United States, is under serious threat in the way German democracy was prior to Hitler's rise and really could topple all together. And he also goes on to say, that he wrote a book in 1992, Ordinary Men, and this book is widely seen as one of the defining works on how typical Germans became complicit in Nazi atrocities. I'm seeing parallels in Germany right now. I'm seeing them also here in this country. I'm seeing them in many countries. But it's a warning. We go on in our update to talk about the coming economic crash. Today we talk about how everything is so well economically. And this article by Loeb Locke writes, it's never if there will be a bust, but when. And then they're quoting hedge fund manager Ray Dalio. He expects a major economic downturn in the United States in 2 years. And that is echoed by Project Syndicate. They say by 2020, the conditions will be ripe for a financial crisis, followed by a global recession. Did you get that? A global recession. And then it says that the next crisis could even be more severe and prolonged than the last. And that was followed by an article by Express. We could have quoted many articles, dated October 11. Do we even have 2 more years? Is a question. This article says global markets have been plunged into chaos today, with stocks plummeting in Europe and Asia, following Wall Street's worst day since February. Shares sank into a sea of red as world markets slumped to their lowest level in 8 months. It says China witnessed its lowest stock market level in almost 4 years. Only because the Feds did something which brought this chaos about. We shouldn't think that we are living in a time where everything is going to continue the way it is. I believe that Satan knows that his time is short. I wonder how many of us understand that. Satan has great wrath, and we can see that everywhere. Now we're talking about an explosive situation in the Middle East having to do with the U.S. resident journalist who, from all indications, has been murdered by Saudi Arabian forces in the embassy, or the, I think it was the embassy over there in Istanbul. Bloomberg wrote that allegations that Saudi agents flew into Turkey and murdered one of the kingdom's leading critics would have sent shockwaves through bilateral relations at any point. But with the two countries, talking about Turkey and Saudi Arabia, already on opposite sides of some of the Middle East's defining rifts, the accusations are potentially even more explosive. Now, President Trump is under pressure to do something. You know, he always attacked, and rightly so, Mr. Obama for talking about a red line and then saying, well, once that line is, the red line is reached, then I will do something, and of course he never did. Now, it's up to President Trump to do something. Otherwise, he will be looked upon as a coward, like Mr. Obama was looked upon as a coward. Now, he already said, unfortunately, there will be no economic sanctions because of the huge arms deal which America made with Saudi Arabia. But then he talked about other severe punishment, and of course he never specified as to what that severe punishment is supposed to be. I found an article this morning by The Week saying, Saudi Arabia is no friend of democracy, liberty, or even common decency. They pointed out something we have forgotten, I believe, that most of the 9/11 hijackers were Saudis. And recently, the court allowed those victims, those survivors, or the victims of those survivors, or relatives, to file lawsuits against the government of Saudi Arabia. Now, I haven't even heard what came out of this. But it seems to be pretty much established that Saudi Arabia was in part behind the terrorist attack. The article goes on to say, and I wonder whether you knew this, because I didn't. It says, the new crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, came to power in 2017, casting himself as a liberal reformer. Since then, it has become starkly obvious that bin Salman was just setting himself up as a ruthless, absolute dictator. His domestic opponents have been reportedly kidnapped, extorted, and even tortured. A Twitter account closely associated with the governmental boldly threatened Toronto with a 9/11 style attack after the Canadian government criticized the Saudis for arresting a women's rights reformer. Saudis have been arming, paying, and recruiting Al-Qaeda as part of bin Salman's quasi-genocidal war in Yemen. It says America should very obviously ditch the alliance with Saudi Arabia immediately. That kind of despicable, murderous authoritarianism has no place in the community of nations. Will America do that? I doubt it. America, not just under President Trump, even before, even under Mr. Obama and President Bush and so on, has had a very close relationship with Saudi Arabia. Far too close, if you ask me. But in any event, that's what's going on. And so it's going to create more turmoil in the Middle East. And of course, Hurricane Michael, no relationship, I think, has caused tremendous devastation now in Florida. It says that the Category 4 monster, it was almost a Category 5, was among the most powerful hurricanes in half a century to strike the mainland United States, and it was the most powerful hurricane to hit the Florida panhandle. At this point, there are still about 900,000 people without power, and many of them you can't even get to. They have no food. They have no shelter. It's a horrible situation. Now, we say in our comments that many blame climate change for the increased hurricane activities. Whatever the truth, it is clear to us that Satan, the prince of the power of the air, is a real instigator of these devastating developments. But God allows them in his attempt to wake America up. America is still very much asleep. We also have an interesting article here by Politico asking the question, what if President Trump refuses to leave after his terms are up? Is that possible? Is it likely? Could it happen? Well, I leave that to you to decide, but we made the following comment. And I want to go again on record, because later on people can always say some interesting things. I want to say them ahead of time. As we have proclaimed from the outset, when Donald Trump announced his presidential candidacy, that Trump would become America's 45th president, we have also stated time and time again, I'm saying it now, that we believe strongly that Trump will be America's last president. And I leave that to you to let that sink in. Now, the antagonistic relationship between Europe and America is continuing. We have an article here to the effect that Merkel warned Trump in very strong terms, and that Europe defies Trump over Iran, and that will have consequences for us here as well. This article says that, defying Trump, the EU plans to support trade with Iran. The EU is rushing to set up a payment system to bypass U.S. sanctions against Iran. The move is likely to deepen the rift between the U.S. and Europe. That's Handelsblatt Global writing this. Washington has warned countries they face penalties if they disregard those sanctions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said last week, and listen to that wording, he was disturbed and indeed deeply disappointed at the planned special payment system. This is one of the most counterproductive measures imaginable for regional global peace and security. By sustaining revenues to the regime, you are solidifying Iran's ranking as the number one state sponsor of terror. And now banks have begun to inquire into the accounts of their customers, asking them, where does the money come from? Do you have any relationship with Russia, with China, with Iran, and with Iraq? They want to find out whether these sanctions, for instance, which America has unilaterally imposed on certain countries, are being circumvented. And the threat is, if they are, they close the accounts. What if they start sanctions against Germany, which is going to happen, against European countries, which is going to happen? You see how Satan is trying to destroy the Church of God. That's what's basically tantamount to. Think about that one. Then we talk about the fact that Merkel's days are on a sinking ship, and then they are numbered. There are some elections coming up in Germany, one coming up tomorrow in Bavaria. In 2 weeks, it's in Hessen. And something like the midterm elections over here, but these are state elections. They all expect that Merkel's party will go really down. They still might be the number one party to an extent, but by no means will they ever get the majority they would need to rule without a coalition, and maybe one coalition party is not even enough. That brings up what is happening with the so-called AfD. The AfD, that is the party in Germany, the alternate party. It's a anti-immigration and pro-military party, and they are profiting from that rule, I might say the incompetent rule, of Merkel's government at this point. We say in our updates, and of course in our comments, and these are reflections of newspaper articles I read over there in Germany and also news programs I've seen, concerns regarding the AfD are well-founded. A leader of the AfD has made outrageous and ridiculous statements, including the preposterous allegation that Hitler was forced to invade Poland. He also called Count Stauffenberg a coward. Now, Stauffenberg was the one, as you will recall, who actually tried to assassinate Hitler in 1944. The movie with Tom Cruise, Valkyrie, goes into that. Actually a good movie, if you haven't seen it. So this was a coward, according to this guy. But not only that, they also went further. It looks like almost on a regular basis they have these legislative initiatives. and that the parliament has to have hours to debate them. There was one which was introduced. They said, oh, we have to fight Islam. They said, there are illegal statements in the Quran. That's all they said. So the parliament had to debate this for I don't know how long to figure out what in the world they wanted to do. And of course, they are like a political chameleon. They know exactly what the nerve is. So now they want to ban gay marriage. Well, of course, we wouldn't be opposed to that. But they are doing it in order to get more and more votes. And it is interesting that the patriotic and pro-military stance of many Germans is noteworthy now, because at one time, post-war Germany was known to be a pacifistic country, and things have changed. The AfD has been compared with National Socialism, classic National Socialism. It says here in one of the articles, in several Eastern German states, they have already been established as the strongest political force. Almost everywhere else in the country, the party currently ranks number two, second. Alexander Gauland, who is one of the leaders, gave a speech, and others have pointed out it's almost like paraphrasing a speech Adolf Hitler gave. They also have now encouraged students to talk and tell on their teachers. They have started platforms now in the country where school children can denounce teachers who speak against the party. And they say here in this article that, of course, that harkens back to the Nazi era or the communist German Democratic Republic, when students and children, minors, were encouraged to speak up against their own parents or teachers in order to, you know, tell the government or whoever what their political views were. These are most certainly very, very dangerous and noteworthy developments. But when it comes to schools, we have our own problems, because now the German governments have begun to really create it more difficult for our children to be able to go to the feasts, especially the Feast of Tabernacles. We have one member that was denied, and she filed an objection. We haven't heard yet. She did go with the children to the feast, but, you know, we might hear more. But then the United Church over there in Germany approached me, because they have a case pending where it already went to the court. And again, it was a mother with children, and she got completely denied. And so we see this more and more, how the government in Germany is manifesting itself even before the animal, the beast, has manifested itself as somebody who is enforcing the mark of the beast. I mean, there is no question about it. It's all against God's laws. It's all against the holy days, the Sabbath, and we try what we can, but ultimately God has to give us a victory, because our members will not go to the feast, no matter what the consequences. And that's something which we have to keep in mind, and I believe that's something which we need to pray about, that God gives us that possibility, because things will get tougher. Angela Merkel, as I said, is not going to be in power much longer, and I'm not setting any dates, but she's not going to be in power much longer. I'm not saying that the next leader of Germany is the one. He could be, but then he might not be. But he most certainly will be used to bring it all about. That's no question. There's no question about that. And I have certain ideas as to whom to look for, whom to observe. And once I see clearer, I will let you know. At this point, I don't know yet. But in any event, just to show you how far left and far liberal and far ungodly Germany has become. The Pope, for once, said something which was right. He condemned abortion, called it contract killing. He complained about the depreciation of human life. He cited wars, exploitation, and what he called a culture of wastefulness, as well as abortion. He says, how can an act that suppresses innocent life be therapeutic, civil, or even human? The reaction in Germany was unbelievable. German Family Minister Franziska Giffey slammed Pope Francis on Thursday for his recent comments on abortion. She said the Pope's comments were unacceptable, saying no women take lightly the decision to abort. Germany's Professional Association of Gynecologists was also outraged, saying, now listen to this, abortions are performed out of necessity. Have you ever heard a more stupid and unbelievably abominable statement? They are being performed out of necessity. 95% at least are not. There might be some cases, yes, you would perhaps from a human standpoint look at it as perhaps justifiable. 95% are not at all. But here's the point. What does the Bible have to say? The Bible says abortion is wrong. Every abortion is wrong. The Bible calls it murder. There are no exceptions to that. Abortions are not performed generally because of necessity. This is ridiculous. It's a stupid comment. But that's how liberal the society has gotten. See, people don't get the right perspective when they talk about Nazi Germany. They think, oh, it was a very right-winged radical situation. It was National Socialism. That's what it was, National Socialism, right? So we see that over there in Germany happening, National Socialism. And the more we see it, the more we should understand how close we are to the final revival of the ancient Roman Empire. And then we have a Q&A, which is actually part three of our series on Do We Believe in the Prosperity Gospel? And I don't want to take too much time on it, except to give you a few quotes, because I believe they fit right into what we are talking about. It says here, when our worldwide economic troubles increase, all our wealth, riches, and money will be useless, without value. None of them will help us. People will throw their gold as well as their silver into the streets, treating it as refuse because it will be totally worthless. And then we say that in Matthew chapter 13, the following warning is given. Then he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, behold, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. Now he who received seed among the thorns is he who hears the word. They hear the word. And the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. There was some fruit there originally, apparently, for a while. But the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches, and you can put in riches or money or whatever you want to put in when it comes to material things, can easily choke the word. Because, you see, the priority is no longer there. Seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, it says, and then all these things will be given to you. But people who are going back into the world which they came out of, and it doesn't have to be a complete departure to begin with, it can be gradually, will lose their love for God, will lose their love for God's way of life, will have other priorities, and they will ultimately leave completely. I've given a sermon over there in Germany during the feast, and I will give this here as well, talking about the unpardonable sin. It doesn't start with hatred towards God. That's where it ends. It starts many times with neglect, negligence. Other priorities suddenly become more important. We also say in this Q&A, we must not trust in our riches or allow them to prevent us from following God completely. If need be, and the question is, we have to ask ourselves that, every single one of us. If need be, we must be willing to give all of that up. Leave it behind. Are we willing to do that? That's a question which becomes more and more important as we go through these times. Now, before I close with the update, I'd like to say that because of the, and it's good, it's a good problem to have, because of the many requests we got for our literature, we were forced to do some reprinting. So we just did the reprinting of Europa in der Prophezeiung, Europe in Prophecy. In fact, if you look at that, you might be surprised how many reprintings we did on that booklet. We have done One, two, three, four reprintings on that. Then we did Jesus Christ, the Great Mystery, because we ran out of this one. And we did it in this fashion, with a different new cover. So that was the old one, and that's the new one. And we just reprinted that. And then we reprinted The Fall and Rise of Britain in America. We ran out of that one too. And guess what? Shelley Bruno, you're listening? I'm going to send you, maybe tomorrow, the request for four more reprints. I have to send that to you first because you have to make them up to date because we have to reprint four more different booklets. And as I said, we went to our the place where we store our booklets and we realized, oh, we don't have enough out of these. So, you know, the work is going on. Satan knows that. And that's why he's so angry.